Geostatistics Explained, Chapter 9, Type 1 and Type 2 Error, Power, and Sample Size. 9.1, Introduction. Every time you make a decision based on the probability of a particular result, there's a risk that your decision is wrong. There are two sorts of mistakes that you can make, and these are called Type 1 Error and Type 2 Error. 9.2, Type 1 Error. Type 1 error, or false positive, occurs when you decide the null hypothesis is false when in reality it's not. Imagine you have taken a sample of size n from a population with known statistics of mu and sigma and subjected this sample to a particular experimental treatment. Because the population statistics are known, you could test whether this sample mean was significantly different from the population mean by doing a z-test, section 8.3. If the treatment had no effect, the null hypothesis would apply and your sample would simply be equivalent to one drawn at random from the population. Nevertheless, 5% of the sample means of size n will lie outside the 95% confidence interval of mu plus or minus 1.96 SEM. Therefore, 5% of the time, you would incorrectly reject the null hypothesis of no difference between your sample mean and the population, and accept the alternate hypothesis. This is a type 1 error. It is important to realize that a type 1 error can only occur when the null hypothesis applies. There is absolutely no risk if the null hypothesis is actually false. Unfortunately, you are most unlikely to know if the null hypothesis applies or not. If you did, then you wouldn't be doing an experiment to test it. If the null hypothesis applies, the risk of type 1 error is the same as the probability level you have chosen. Figure 9.1, illustration of type 1 error. The known population mean is 12.16, and the 95% confidence interval for the mean is shown as the double-headed horizontal arrow. There is no effect of treatment, so the distribution of sample means from the experimental population will be the same as those from the untreated population. Nevertheless, 5% of your sample means will, by chance, lie in the shaded areas outside of the 95% confidence interval. Whenever a sample mean occurs in either of these areas, you will incorrectly reject the null hypothesis and make a type 1 error. This risk is unavoidable when the null hypothesis applies, but can be controlled easily by the chosen value of alpha. An alpha of 0.05 will have a 5% probability of type 1 error, but an alpha of 0.01 will only have a 1% probability of type 1 error. Here, therefore, you may be thinking, quote, then why do we usually set alpha at 0.05? Surely an alpha of 0.01 or 0.001 would reduce the risk of type 1 error, unquote. It will, but it will affect the likelihood of type 2 error. 9.3, type 2 error. A type 2 error, or false negative, occurs when you do not reject the null hypothesis even though it is false. For example, above, this would occur when the treatment had a real effect, but your experiment and analysis did not detect it. Here's an example using a single sample two-tailed z-test where population statistics are known. 9.3.1, a worked example showing type 2 error. The weight percent of Al2O3, that's aluminum 2, oxygen 3, I guess, in lower crustal granulite xenoliths, rocks from deep within Earth's crust that have become encased in magma and brought to the surface by volcanic activity, has a population mean of 12.16 and a standard deviation of 2.43. These statistics are for a sample size of more than 1,000 xenoliths, so they can be considered to be population statistics of mu and sigma. You have a sample of 7 lower crustal granulite xenoliths that appear to have experienced metasomatism, that is, they have been affected by hydrothermal or other fluids, and wish to determine if this, quote, treatment has changed their Al2O3 content. Here, you need to imagine the case where the metasomatism has caused an average increase in aluminum oxide, if that's what that's called. So the mean of the metasomatized population is 1% weight more than the mean of the known, quote, untreated population. But you don't know this. This change is often called the effect size of a treatment. To test if this effect is significant, you measure the aluminum oxide of your 7 metasomatized xenoliths and then compare the mean of this sample to that of the untreated population. First, consider the case where you take a sample of n equals 7 from each population. The expected standard error of each mean will be sigma divided by the square root of n equals 2.43 divided by the square root of 7 equals 0.92. Therefore, the range around mu within which you would expect 95% of sample means from the untreated population to occur would be mu plus or minus 1.96 times SEM, which is 12.16 plus or minus the product of 1.96 times 0.92, and thus 12.16 plus or minus 1.8, giving a wide range from 10.36 to 13.96. With an effect size of 1, the range around mu metasomatized, within which you would expect 95% of sample means from the treated population, is 13.16 plus or minus 1.8, which is from 11.36 to 14.96. These two ranges are shown in Figure 9.3a. Importantly, they overlap considerably, with most of the means of samples from the treated population falling within the expected range of the means of samples from the untreated one. Therefore, if you were to measure 7 metasomatized xenoliths, there's a very high probability that their sample mean would fall within the 95% confidence interval of the untreated population, and thus would not be considered significantly different to mu. Even though there is a real effect of metasomatism, your sample size is too small to detect it very often, so you will frequently make a type 2 error. Figure 9.2, the concept of effect size displacing the population mean. The population mean, mu, is 12.16 weight percent aluminum oxide, but metasomatism appears to increase the overall aluminum oxide by 1% weight. Figure 9.3, sample size has an effect on the range within which 95% of the means of samples from a population will occur. The expected distributions of the means of samples taken from two populations with the same variance, one of which has a mu of 12.16 and the other of which has a mu metasomatized of 13.16, are shown. A. When n equals 7, the sample means are expected to occur within a relatively wide range around each mean. B. When n equals 12, the sample means are expected to occur within a narrower range. C. When n equals 80, the sample means are expected to occur within a much narrower range. So here we just have three figures where we have two overlapping normal distributions, which I think are, they get narrower and narrower the larger the sample size. Now, consider the case where you have a sample of n equals 12 metasomatized xenoliths. As the sample size increases, the standard error of the mean, and therefore the 95% confidence interval of the mean, will reduce. For a sample size of 12, the standard error of the mean is sigma divided by the square root of n equals 2.43 divided by square root of 12 equals 0.701. Note that this value is smaller than the SEM for the sample of 7 given above. Therefore, the 95% confidence interval for the distribution of values of the mean around mu is 12.16 plus or minus 1.375, which is from 10.79 to 13.53. And the distribution around mu, metasomatized, is 13.16 plus or minus 1.375, which is from 11.79 to 14.53. These two ranges are shown in Figure 9.3b. The confidence intervals have been reduced, but the majority of the sample means from the treated population still lie within the expected range from the untreated one, so the risk of type 2 error is still very high. Finally, for a sample size of 80, the standard error will be greatly reduced at 2.43 divided by the square root of 80 equals 0.272. Therefore, the 95% confidence interval for the mean of a sample of 80 will be mu plus or minus 0.532, which is from 11.63 to 12.69 for the untreated population, and from 12.63 to 13.69 for the treated one, figure 9.3c. There is little overlap between the 95% confidence intervals of both groups, so you're much less likely to make a type 2 error. When the sample size is 80, there is only a small risk of failing to reject the null hypothesis that mu equals 12.16% weight aluminum oxide, because only about 5% of the possible values from the sample mean from the treated population are still within the region expected if the mean of 12.16 is correct. Figure 9.4. The probability of type 2 error is symbolized by beta, and is the probability of failing to reject the null hypothesis when it is false. Therefore, as shown in Figure 9.4, the value of beta is the shaded area of the treated distribution lying to the left of the upper confidence limit for mu. 9.4, the power of a test. The power of a test is the probability of making the correct decision and rejecting the null hypothesis when it is false. Therefore, power is the area of the treated distribution to the right of the vertical line in figure 9.4. If you know beta, you can calculate power as 1 minus beta. Figure 9.4. The probability of a type 2 error is the shaded area to the left of the vertical line marking the upper confidence limit, 12.69, of mu. The risk of type 2 error is low, but it will be greater if the sample size is smaller. At 80% power, an 80% power is considered desirable. That is, there is only a 20% chance of a type 2 error and an 80% chance of not making a type 2 error when the null hypothesis is false. 9.4.1. What determines the power of a test? The power of a test depends on several things, only some of which can be controlled by the researcher. The uncontrollable factors are effect size and the variance of the population. As effect size increases, the power will increase and will eventually be 100% as the two distributions get further and further apart. Figure 9.5a. Samples from populations with a relatively small variance will have a smaller standard error of the mean, so overlap between untreated and treated distributions will be less than for samples from populations with a larger variance, figure 9.5b. The controllable factors are the sample size and your chosen value of alpha. As sample size increases, your risk of type 2 error decreases, and power therefore increases because the standard error of the mean decreases. This has already been described in figure 9.3. As the chosen value of alpha decreases, e.g. from 0.1 to 0.5 to 0.01 to 0.001, the risk of type 1 error decreases. But the risk of a type 2 error increases. This is shown in figure 9.6. There's a trade-off between risks of type 1 and type 2 error. Figure 9.5. Uncontrollable factors affecting power. A. Effect size will determine power. And if the effect size is large enough, power will be 100%. The arrows show effect size. B. With a fixed effect size, a test comparing the distribution of sample means from a population with relatively small variance, the pair of graphs on the left, will have greater power than if the population is large, the pair of graphs on the right. 9.5. What sample size do you need to ensure the risk of type 2 error is not too high? Without compromising the risk of type 1 error, the only way a researcher can reduce the risk of type 2 error to an acceptable level and therefore ensure sufficient power is to increase the sample size. Every researcher has to ask themselves the question, quote, what sample size do I need to ensure the risk of type 2 error is low and therefore power is high, unquote. This is an important question because samples may be difficult to collect and the characterization may be expensive, so there's no point in increasing the sample size past the point where power reaches an acceptable level. For example, if a sample size of 35 gave 100% power, there is no point in taking any more than this number of replicates. Unfortunately, the only way to estimate the appropriate minimum sample size needed in an experiment is to know or have good estimates of the effect size and standard deviation of the population, and this is often impractical or subject to interpretation in geological situations. Often the only way to estimate these is to do a pilot experiment with a sample. For most tests, there are formulae that use 3 sample statistics to give the appropriate size sample for a desired power. Some statistical packages will calculate the power of a test as part of the analysis. Figure 9.6. The trade-off between type 1 and type 2 error. A. Alpha set at 10%. B. Decreasing alpha to 0.05 will reduce the risk of type 1 error, but will increase the risk of type 2 error. C. Decreasing alpha to 0.01 will further decrease the risk of type 1 error, but greatly increase the risk of type 2 error. And we have two normal distributions here. They have an overlapping area that is shaded dark. That's presumably the chance of making an error. And the more overlap they get, depending on the parameters, then the greater that chance of error. 9.6. Type 1 error, type 2 error, and the concept of risk. The commonly used alpha of 0.05 sets the risk of type 1 error at 5%, while at 20% is considered an acceptable risk of type 2 error. Nevertheless, these risks have to be considered in relation to the consequences of an incorrect decision about the null or alternate hypotheses. There was a discussion about the appropriate level of risk of type 1 error depending on the consequences in Chapter 6, and the same considerations apply to the risk of type 2 error. For example, a test that has a 20% chance of incorrectly retaining the null hypothesis of no effect may be considered inappropriate if you are testing for the undesirable side effects of a new sample preparation, or evaluating whether the release of lead from a landfill into a river is affecting the concentration of lead in a lake downstream. Every time you run a statistical test, you have to consider not only the risk of type 1 and type 2 error, but also the consequences of these risks. 9.7. Conclusion. Whenever you make a decision based on the probability of a result, there is a risk of either a type 1 or a type 2 error. There is only a risk of type 1 error when the null hypothesis applies, and the risk is the chosen probability level alpha. There is only a risk of type 2 error when the null hypothesis is false. Here, the risk of type 2 error, beta, is affected by several factors, but the most controllable is sample size. As sample size increases, the risk of type 2 error decreases. Power is the converse of type 2 error. Power is 1 minus beta and is the ability of the test to reject the null hypothesis when it is false. There are formulae for calculating the appropriate sample size to ensure that the risk of type 2 error is acceptable, e.g. 20%, and therefore a test has acceptable power. But these calculations rely on an estimate of effect size and the standard deviation of the sample or population. The risks of type 1 and type 2 error also need to be considered in terms of geoscientific risk. Depending on the consequences of making each type of error, you may find an alpha of 5% or a beta of 20% unacceptable. Finally, the example of xenoliths used in this chapter was deliberately used only one variable, and therefore a very specific hypothesis to measure the effect of metasomatism on the aluminum oxide. Often, however, you may be able to measure several variables, i.e. several chemical constituents, including aluminum oxide. Therefore, if you're testing more than one hypothesis that, quote, metasomatism affects the chemical composition of xenoliths, unquote, then a multivariate data set will provide more information and may give a more reliable result. Methods for analyzing multivariate data are discussed in Chapter 20. 9.8. Questions. 1. Comment on the following. Quote, depending on sample size, a non-significant result in a statistical test may not necessarily be correct. Unquote. 2. Explain the following. Quote, I did an experiment with only 10% power, therefore beta was 90%, but the null hypothesis was rejected, so the low power does not matter and I can trust the result. Unquote.